Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the May edition of the Arsenal Women Arsecast, and we've got a few special guests for you today in this episode, but the most special guest, we're going to introduce the new co-host of the Arsenal Women Arsecast, Pippa Monique. Pippa.
Wow. I don't think I'm the most special, judging by who's coming up on the show today, but that is an introduction.
It's quite true. As I kind of said in one of the articles a couple of weeks ago, Pippa's going to be kind of hosting some of these as well, so you're not just getting my voice all the time. Pippa, why don't we start? Why don't you tell the listeners, and me actually, a little bit about yourself, your background in women's football, and how you got into producing women's football content?
Wicked. I don't know where to start, really. I think, can I take you all the way back when I first got interested in football?
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm the youngest of two siblings, so I've got an older brother that used to be a coach of our local team. And I used to be his tag along, really, while my mum was at work. So there's a big age gap between us. So I used to tag along with him to his football coaching sessions. And then I ended up joining in out of boredom. And then I just like fell in love with the game. And we're from Stratford in East London. So we played for like West Ham mainly. And there was one time that we got called up to go play for West Ham. And
wow.
Yeah. So I always, this is my claim to fame. I always tell people I played for West Ham Juniors. I did. It was literally only for a month, but I still did it. And we got awarded by the end of the... Well, I only stayed for a month, but we got awarded by Harry Redknapp, and I was literally the only girl on the team. And I was like, I love this game. Like, wow. I was like, this is... At the time, I didn't even know who Harry Redknapp was. Everyone was getting so excited. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm just learning about football. So I carried on, but I was doing a lot of things as a youth, like singing, dancing, musical theatre and stuff. But yeah. Football was always my main passion. So I used to always play. I went to a girls' school, would always play at lunchtime anyway, find a way to do that. I was my sports captain throughout the whole time at school in every year.
And do you still play at all?
No. And I've got invited to play tomorrow at a London Premier League pitch.
Oh wow.
And I'm terrified, because the last time I kicked ball was about 2007. That's the last time I actually played a game. So
wow.
I have a kick about now and then with my son, and he outskills me all the time, so don't know what's going to happen on that pitch, to be fair.
Nice. And so how did you then get into women's football, I guess, and kind of producing content around that?
So yeah, I stopped playing about the age 17, 18, but I still loved the game so much. And I was like, because I wasn't good enough, to be fair. I didn't have that confidence in playing. I was like, what else can I do in football? Like, I really want to do something. And I didn't know women's football was a thing until 2007, 2008. And I saw it on TV and I was like, wow, I don't want to play, but there must be something I can do. And I remember tweeting a few years ago, it's probably still up there, that I would love to host a women's football show one day. And that's just always been in the forefront of my mind, and I was just like, how can I do this? I don't know where to go. I don't have the qualifications for that. So I just thought, okay, I talk about it a lot, and everyone around me was like, why don't you just pick up a camera and do it yourself? And I was like, no, I don't know how to do that stuff. I'm camera shy. There's no way I will do that. And I just thought, you know what, just do it. So I did my first video, but it was when I first started creating videos, it was around the Premier League, because I'm an Arsenal fan, obviously.
Yeah.
And I just created content around Arsenal. So whether I was going to a match, I'd do a match day vlog. I would just sit there and talk about the game, talk about the players. And that's how I started. And I thought, why am I neglecting the women's game? This is the whole reason I got into this. So I started doing my research a bit more and just went down to Bournemouth and said, yeah, in 2015, I was like, I have to do this.
And that's, I think that's one of the great things, like with women's football as well. I think if anyone's like, I don't know, coming out of university or anything, or looking to get exposure, like women's football is like a perfect place, really.
Yeah,
like,
because
you get the access like quite easily, and the players are so good and like so good with their time.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's really, really great, like if you're looking to kind of like sharpen those skills. But I think you're right, that kind of like that DIY element to it, just that kind of, you know, I don't really have to flash like a big press badge to get in. I can just get in and then bang, I've got FaceTime with the manager, or like these really like elite level kind of players. And did you find any of that daunting initially?
Yes, of course. So I didn't do any of the going down to the ground and applying for press passes until, so I actually studied sports journalism. I didn't get to finish my degree, but I was studying, and whilst I was on my course, I was on a placement for Millwall Lionesses. And while I was there, my first ever interview that I did was with Rinzola Babajide, who was at Millwall at the time. And I was like, oh, wow, this was quite cool. Like, I got access. I was able to interview players, to interview the manager. And I did it all for the FAWSL website at the time. And I was like, cool, okay, I've done this. My university has put me in the position to do this. And I thought, let me just try and do it myself and reach out now that I've, you know, dipped my toe in. I didn't do it straight away. And I only started really in 2018 that I got the confidence to say, right, Phil, go all the way. You can do this. You're confident with a camera now. You know what you're talking about. Just go and do it.
That's amazing. And you've done some work for, well, AFTV, as they're now called, Arsenal Fan TV. How did that come about?
So, so this is when I first started picking up a camera. This was about 2013. Or was that? Oh my gosh, I can't remember. It was a while ago. I think 2013. I remember it was an Emirates Cup game. 2013 sounds like a long time ago, but I feel like that was the year. But yeah, I found their YouTube page, because obviously this is what I wanted to start doing. And I found their YouTube page, and at the time they had about 4,000 subscribers, which is still quite a lot, but compared to now, a very small channel. And I reached out to them and I said, well, this is something I want to do, but seeing as you're doing it, we might as well collaborate. And they were like, cool, well, we're looking for a female presenter, so let's meet up at a game one time. And I met them just before the Emirates Cup. It was I don't remember what Emirates Cup it was, to be fair. But I met up with them, with Robbie and Tal, the cameraman, and they loved me. They loved my knowledge of the game, loved the fact that I was an Arsenal fan, of course. And we just went from there. So I used to do a lot of fan interviews. People probably don't even know that now, because it's so far back in the distance. I used to do a lot of the fan interviews before the game, and a bit of fun content where I'd like quiz the fans about their knowledge on Arsenal. It was quite funny actually, because a lot of fans didn't know what year Arsenal was founded, which was quite strange. Even though, like, I swear most of the shirts is on the emblem, but okay. So yeah, I did a bit of that. So that's how that came about. I just emailed them, reached out to them, and I've been a part of that AFTV family ever since, to be fair.
Oh wow. And I saw a post you put, I can't remember if it was on your Instagram or your Twitter the other day, about Rachel Yankee.
Because
Rachel was obviously working at the Arsenal Man City game recently, and like massive Arsenal legend. I've been going to watch Arsenal ladies since about 95 96. And so, like, I kind of, this makes me feel really old, but I got
I was like, wow.
I got like the beginning of Rachel Yankee's career, and I've got like a signed shirt from her somewhere from like 1998 or something like that.
Wow.
But I saw this this post, you know, I think you took a picture with Rachel Yankee, and why that was so special to you. Do you perhaps want to explain why meeting Rachel Yankee a couple of weeks ago was such a big thing for you?
This was something. I was literally sat next to her in the press box, and I was like, wow, I got a decent seat here. And I didn't know how to start a conversation with her, because I was literally starstruck. So as I said, I'm late to the game. I'm not an OG like you. I found out about women's football in 2007, and I remember it vividly, because I used to spend a lot of time in my grandparents' house on the weekends, and they had, you know, the old school five channels. And I was flicking through the channels, bored. I think it was a Saturday afternoon, and I can't remember what game it was, but Arsenal were playing on the TV, Arsenal women. And I was like, what? There's an Arsenal women? How do I not know about this? Like, what? And I literally took out my notepad and I started writing down all the names of the players as the commentator was announcing them. And Rachel Yankee was like immediately my favourite player on the pitch as I was watching her. And I was like, oh my God, this is a legend. And that was the first time I ever encountered her. And to think 12 years later, I was sitting next to her. It was insane. It was mind blowing because I was like, wow, I remember when I was a little teenager watching you on TV thinking, I want to be like you. Because the moment I watched you on TV, I applied for football trials at Leyton Orient, I think it was, and Colchester, Charlton, all these places, because they inspired me. And I was like, because this was when I was still playing, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to do this. But yeah, it didn't go that way.
And do you know, like, one of like the most fascinating things about Rachel Yankee's backstory, do you know when she was younger?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, about her, because there were no girls' teams, so she shaved her head.
I remember that. That was the most interesting thing at the time that I read about her, and that's why I think she like clicked. I was like, wow, I was the only girl on my team as well, so it was a bit,
Yeah, she pretended to be a boy and called herself Ray, because I think those are her initials, which, you know, this is amazing. This is like, you know, the 1990s that this is happening, like, absolutely incredible. You know, that's like, all right, in one sense, it's a long time ago, but in another sense, like, to me, that doesn't feel like a really long time ago. And Rachel's, like, hugely, hugely inspirational figure. And talking of inspirational figures, of course, you and I went down to London Colney, or up to London Colney, from my position in London anyway, to talk to Joe Montemurro, the Arsenal manager, and... Arsenal also gave us six players to interview, which we didn't find out until we rolled up and started setting up. So we kind of pulled six interviews out of the fire, really. But we had a really good chat with Joe. And have you interviewed Joe before? I can't remember.
Yeah, I had post-game of that time you beat Chelsea 5-0.
Yes.
So that was a great interview to have. And he's amazing. I'm glad that we have him and what he's brought to the team, the ethos, the way they play. So
he's like, and it will come across in this interview as well, the best way I think I could describe him is like very Australian, in that you can't help to be like relaxed in his company. And he has I think it will come through in this interview, he has a really, really good personal touch with people, and I think it's really obvious why the players absolutely love him. So why don't we roll that interview with Joe now, and we'll see you on the other side. Okay, joining me now, the manager of the Champions of England, Joe Montemurro. Joe, thanks very much for joining us. Joe, I kind of want to wind things back to when you first joined Arsenal at the end of 2017. And it seems to me, looking from the outside, that tactically what you kind of focused on first was solidifying the base of that team. So it's a very consistent selection in the back four with Dominic Bloodworth. And then this season, you've kind of mixed things up a little bit more, flitting between a back three and a back four. Was that always part of your plan when you came in, just to kind of keep things quite steady and stable, and then once you had a pre-season to mix things up a little bit?
Champions of England, that sounds all right. That sounds good. Absolutely. You've hit it right on the head. I think the way we want to play, to have a style of play, to have a belief in the way that we play, you need insurance policies. And that gives the players the confidence and the belief that every game they go into, they can always fall back on these insurance policies and get something out of the game. So yeah, we set out to play away. We set out to design the way we wanted to play, and we created effectively some core values, some core rules that underpin all that. Then once you've got that base, you can then switch in between. You can then go to a back three because the core is still the same. Then you can play with a bit more width, or you can play a little bit more inside, depending on what the game requires. So yeah, effectively, the core was solidified. The base was solidified, always to our style, always to the way we wanted to play. We believe we should play, and then from there you can then start to develop and basically adapt accordingly.
And and kind of looking at some of the things, the adaptions you made in the summer, you bought some players. Unfortunately, a couple of them were injured for pretty much the whole season. But I'm interested in the signing of Leo Valti in particular, because it seems to me that really helped you to flip between that back three and that back four, particularly
kind of leaning on the versatility of Dominic Bloodworth, who can kind of slot into a back three and play at full-back.
Yeah.
And kind of particularly the way you like to push your full-backs on, really kind of protect Arsenal against the counter-attacks. And Leah, despite missing almost half the season, was voted into the PFA Team of the Year.
Yeah.
How important was... I mean, her and Dominic Bloodworth, how important have they been in creating that flexibility?
Yeah, two different players. I think Leah is the player that, you know, obviously, you know, scouted and was after for a while, that we were able to bring into the group. And she's how can I put it? She's versatile in terms of A, starting the attack, but B, also identifying the management of when we are attacking, because the way we want to play, you know, it's always going to be one counter-attack, or it's always going to be some moments where we may get caught, and that management of the players that are left back while we're attacking is huge. She does that because she knows when to drop in as a back four if we're playing with a three. She knows when to push on and protect with a second six. She knows when to cover for a fullback, and that's very, very important. Yeah, Dom, look, Dom, the reality with Dom is that we wanted to play her more in central, as a central defender, because she, A, has the explosivity to recover, but also can find the pass. She can also change the point of attack, which is very, very important for the way we play. Obviously finding the space on the opposite side when we need to. Unfortunately, you know, once we lost Leah, we had to play Dom more in the central role. A little bit different to Leah. But yeah, that versatility and that ability for us to be able to manage when we don't have the ball. When we have the ball, is very, very important, because it's identifying the moment that we need to maybe, you know, protect the space behind, or we can go a little bit further and press a little bit higher. To have that special player is important.
Yeah, and I spoke to Dominic Bloodworth at the beginning of the season after the Lewis game, which we won 9-0. And it sounds weird when you win 9-0, and I was sat watching and I thought Dominic Bloodworth had the most interesting kind of role on the pitch that day. She played in the middle of the back three, and it was just every single time she got the ball, she was hitting those flanks. And I spoke to her about that afterwards, and she said that you'd watch videos of Lewis and you identified this as a particular area where you could hurt them. And that impressed me, not just in terms of the level of preparation, but the level of professionalism, where, really, speaking bluntly, Arsenal don't need to do a lot of preparation to go and beat Lewis and to go and beat them well. But how much, you know, looking at the weaknesses of quite an inferior opponent, how much of that is about creating a really professional environment where the preparation for every game is meticulous, and how much has that contributed to not dropping a single point to any team outside the top three?
You ask amazing questions, because you're hitting little chords which are very, very important to what we do. First of all, it's the base. So first of all, the core structure of the way we want to play is very, very important. And once you solidify that, once there's a belief, once you train for that every day, and they understand their roles and responsibilities in that, that's the first layer that needs to be a non-negotiable as far as I'm concerned. The important thing is then to know what to identify in the opposition. So you can pick many, many things by watching the opposition over four or five games and say they do this, they do that, they do that. But what is the most important thing that's going to suit our style that we think we could unlock them? So it's always two or three little basic things that always is within our style, within the way we want to play, that I believe that we just need to adapt to say, okay, today it's width in the middle third. So as soon as we get the ball, we need to empty the space, find width in the middle third, and that's where you play when we have the ball. The reality is that we want the ball, we want to keep the ball, we want to find the solutions with the ball, and the more you instill that, then you can find those solutions, because you show them and say, okay, we've got the ball in this area, that area's open, we need to prepare to go to that area. So it's not so much picking the brains out of the opposition, it's finding those two or three elements that we believe we could find a solution within our style, and that's the most important thing. And once they believe in the style, they know that they can adapt to that solution. Our you know, our culture has been created within a football environment. Football solutions, football discussions. How can we make things better within football language? And that's created our culture. It's not about, you know, other things. It's about football. That's what we're here for, and the professionalism of football discussion. And that's the most important thing for us.
And another thing you changed quite notably, you brought in Pauline Perry-Magnon from France as a goalkeeper. And I think many people, myself included, kind of expected her to come in as a backup goalkeeper. But actually, I mean, you've shared between the goalkeepers quite a lot, but she's played marginally more than Sarri. And Sarri's, you know, big figure at Arsenal, and obviously it's a World Cup year. Was there was it a difficult conversation to have with Sarri to say that that there's going to be this job share with the goalkeepers? And what's the thinking behind that?
I think it was very, very important for Sarri to be challenged. I think it was very, very important for Sarri to have someone of equal or of quality that she could improve. And look, Pauline, you know, has obviously been the number two at Lyon, hasn't played much football. So it was that was an exciting project on its own, because she was hungry to prove herself. From the day I saw Pauline, she suited the style, and that's why we brought her in. Was it difficult to have discussions with Sarri? Obviously, because Sarri is a world-class person and player, and you know, and to be told that, hey, you're going to be now you know, maybe fighting for your position or fighting for your spot was always going to be difficult. But I think it was important for her, because going into a World Cup and obviously raising the bar, you know, one of the words which I hate is mediocrity. I hate complacency and mediocrity. I hate that. And I think Sarri will be better for it, that we've raised the bar and given her the tools now to cope with better players around her, better challenges, higher challenges, better solutions, and I think it was very, very important that we did that.
And I read a piece, Jordan Nobbs in the Telegraph last week, and she spoke about kind of the environment of trust that's been created here. And she was saying, you know, you haven't gone in for like bonding weekends and things like that and team building events, and you've just kind of let the players kind of certainly socially as much as anything kind of left them almost to their own devices. Is that a hallmark of your style, or did you just come here and think that this was already a tight-knit group and you didn't really need to do that?
Very much a hallmark of my style. As I just said before, it's about football. It's about football discussions. And if the base of the way you play, what you believe in, how you train, and you see that the way you play is the way you train, and they understand why we're doing it, I don't think you don't need any team bonding or boot camps, because the football is the be all and end all. It's the discussion. It's how we can make it better, because they now have foundations. This team now has a foundation of what it believes in and what it does. They will make it better. They will find the solutions to make things better, because the structure is solid now. And you know, they go out, they have fun, they enjoy themselves. We go out for meals and so on, but we don't need any team bonding. You know, they within this system and within this structure, they found a level of respect and honesty for themselves, that if something's not right, they'll come to me, or they'll tell the group. They're honest with each other and say, hey, I think we need to raise the bar. It's them. It's about the players. It's about them raising the bar. It's about them doing better and wanting to be better. I've created the foundations. I've given them the tools to give them the insurance policies that they can always fall back on to play, to get a 6.5 out of 10, to get a 7 out of 10, if they follow these basic structures and rules. The rest, they'll develop that through a smile, through enjoying their football, and giving them the freedom to play.
And there was a kind of nice montage on the big screen at the Emirates on Sunday, and kind of over the top of it, they were playing one of your, I don't know if it was a team talk or from a meeting or something, and I couldn't hear it all, but one phrase really jumped out at me that made me think, and you said to them, don't complain. And actually it's something I hadn't thought of watching this team all season, that they don't complain and they haven't complained. There's never complaints about refereeing decisions, even though there's probably been a few dodgy tackles on Arsenal players this year. There's been no complaints about that, no complaints about injuries. Again, is that a hallmark of your style, or was that culture already in the group?
We're privileged to be professional footballers. We're privileged to be at Arsenal. We're privileged to every day come in. We have a professional contract. We get paid to do something we love. There's no need to complain about anything. Referees will make mistakes. Referees will do stupid decisions. We could have started complaining about the amount of injuries we had. We have to get on with it. We have to find solutions. We have to be innovative. We have to be better. I just want to be... I want the players to be here to be better, to be better individuals. But I also think we've got a responsibility in women's football too. A lot of these athletes are role models, you know, and it's not a nice look when you're complaining and always this can't happen. Let's just get on with it, and let's not talk about what we don't have. Let's talk about what we can do, with the tools that we got. There's no need to complain. Complaining is insecurity. Complaining is that you are not, we're not comfortable in what we're doing. Complaining is that we don't have the right foundations in place. It's not clear. Things aren't clear. When things are clear, you're comfortable. You're secure. You don't need to complain, because you know that if you do the right things at the right time, the success will happen.
And a final question. It would be completely remiss of me not to ask. Obviously Arsenal are going to be in the Champions League again next year, so anything on your summer plans in terms of bolstering the squad a little bit, and where will you be watching the World Cup?
The World Cup, I'll be in France a little bit, so I'll be going to watch a lot of games. I've got the privilege of going to see some great games. There's going to be some amazing football played, and I'm sure there'll be some superstars that come out of all this. And I think it is an obligation for us to now raise the bar, to get better as Arsenal, and we do need to bring in extra players. There's more games, more challenges, and we need to now balance the squad out to be able to adapt to certain things that other countries and other styles will throw at us. So we need to bolster the squad, and I think what that'll do will just raise the competitive bar of training and the quality of training to make us better.
Joe, thank you very much, and congratulations again.
Brilliant work, huh?
Thank you.
Great work. You do some great stuff.
Cheers.
Well done.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, welcome back. We hope that you really enjoyed that interview with Joe Montemurro. I personally love interviewing Joe because I love talking about tactics and things like that, and I know Joe loves talking about that stuff as well. And I feel like when you ask Joe like a technical question, his eyes really, really light up. And
he was pleasantly surprised how much he knew about his tactics.
I couldn't help thinking when he was talking a little bit about Unai Emery, you know, in terms of like Joe likes to change his team around a bit, but what he was saying about when he first arrived, like keeping that core and getting them believing in the philosophy first and then changing tactics and stuff like that. I couldn't help thinking of Unai Emery and whether he's kind of got things the right way around. But speaking, I suppose, of a slight crossover into men's football, Pippa and I had, like, we had, like, a bit of an incident, didn't we, when we were interviewing Lisa Evans, and we went to interview Lisa, and Petr Cech was in our immediate vicinity doing a drum solo, which I think we've got a little clip of it here. We'll just put it in.
Testing, testing. It's picking that up, right?
Yeah, so we were trying to talk to Lisa, and unfortunately Petr Cech was that was quite. Have you ever had anything like that, like during an interview at all?
Never, fortunately. I've never had anything like that. The worst I've had when I've been outside is a bit of rain, so you just got to shelter. But all that noise, well, I wouldn't say noise, he's got a good talent there.
Yeah he's pretty decent, isn't he, to be fair. Yeah. It's just like a little bit when you're trying to record for audio, like, you know, talking about you and the kind of the content that you do around women's football, and I know you're very in demand with it nowadays, and this weekend past you were in Budapest, right, for the Champions League final. How was that, and what were you doing around the Champions League final?
This was one of the most amazing weekends I've had in a long while. So I was invited out there by UEFA, and I was doing work for Give Me Sport Women. Mm-hmm. And it was a whole weekend organised by UEFA. So they have a campaign called We Play Strong, which is, I guess, where a lot of the players are involved, a lot of the Champions League players. And
Lisa Evans.
And as well as WSL players as well. They just promote the women's game, and they organise a weekend. The day that we all arrived, they had the first ever women's freestyle, European freestyle football championships, where there was 8 freestylers battling it out to be crowned the best European football freestyler, and a freestyler named Agushka won.
Right.
Absolutely amazing. That was part of the campaign, as it was the Champions League first ever standalone Champions League final, because normally they have it in the same city as the men. So to have it here, have it out in Budapest, was just an amazing thing on its own. So what they did, and bringing everyone together, there were so many influential people there from different media organizations, and what they're doing to change the game for women's football. So there was people from beIN Sports, Copper 90. I could go on naming all the list of people that were there, but it was an incredible host of people that UEFA brought together. And then onto the Champions League final, which was absolutely epic. I mean, we all spoke about it beforehand on who we would expect to win. Obviously, about 99% of people went with Leon. Yeah. And the 1% was, you know, rooting for the underdog Barcelona, but it was quite clear that Lyon were going to win, because they are an absolutely outstanding team. And for me, that was the first time I ever got to watch them play live. I genuinely felt privileged to watch them, because they were that good.
Yeah, and I don't think their dominance is going to stop anytime soon. Yeah. Not least because there are kind of spending caps in England. So while, like, you know, Arsenal, Man City, Chelsea in principle have the money behind them, that there's a limit on what they can spend, because it's connected with turnover. And I don't think Lyon have got that restriction. And from what it sounds like, Lyon are going to sign even more big players. Looks like a couple from Man City, a couple more from Man City are going to be heading there this summer, and they're a juggernaut, really. And it's kind of a shame the way the draw came out, really, because Lyon, you know, in the quarterfinal they got Wolfsburg, who always run them close. They got Chelsea in the semi, who run them really close. It was a bit of a lopsided draw, because Barca are an emerging force, but they're just not on Lyon's level, are they, really?
And it showed, to be fair. Yeah. I mean, I felt, I've forgotten her name, but I felt really sorry for the left back, number 15, that had to mark Shanice, because every time Shanice got the ball on the wing, there was absolutely no stopping her. And it looked like she was inexperienced, but it's all part of the game, and it's a learned experience for Barcelona, because, as you say, they're getting used to this game, and it's their first time in a Champions League final. But you could see the levels, the difference between them.
Yeah, and I also kind of saw that one of the people that you met in Budapest, Manuela Zinsberger.
Yes.
Is that right?
Our new signing.
Did you get a chance to have a word with her?
Yeah, I spoke to her quickly, because I met her at the after party.
Yeah.
So it was quite loud, and, you know, everyone's in high spirits. But I spoke to her, and she was super excited. I was super excited to meet her. And I told her what I do. I told her that I am a blogger, and I do a lot of interviews at the Arsenal game. So she was super excited to meet me. She was like, I'll be seeing you lots next season. And she's so excited to join Arsenal. And she did say that well, she's got high hopes, and this is the good thing, because she's not coming to, for, like, she's serious about this. She is basically stamping. She told me that Bea Bresci is going to be in the Champions League final next year. That's what she's saying, because she said, nice. As she's from Austria, she said that the Champions League final next year is apparently in Vienna.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's where she's from, and she's looking. She said she's looking forward to playing the Champions League final in Vienna next year. So
awesome.
Coming to win things for sure.
That's absolutely awesome. And of course, like, there's quite a lot of ex-Bayern players already in the squad. There's two this summer. By the time this goes out, maybe the third one will be announced. Leonie Meyer, the right back. All three of those transfers were agreed earlier this year. And also playing Bayern in the Emirates Cup at the end of July, which is really exciting.
That should be really exciting. I mean, that's not the first time that the Arsenal women have played at the Emirates, but I mean, on an occasion like this where it will be a game just played before the men's game, it's going to be a momentous occasion.
Yeah. And like, from Arsenal's point of view, you know, a lot of people say like, the women should play at the Emirates more, which I think is right. But from Arsenal's point of view, it's not a massive star for Arsenal women. It's a massive, massive kind of thing to try and organise a game at the Emirates, and this way they get the men's resource and they get like a proper gauge for how many people are interested. So if you're one of those people who says they should play at the Emirates more often, basically I can tell you that the club are looking at this and they're going to look very closely at how many bums are on seats at 12:30 on that day. So if you're one of those people, buy tickets for the Emirates Cup, get in your seat at 12:30, because if there's a lot, they will do this more often.
Yes, and I hope to get everyone there.
Exactly, and bear in mind, you know, Tottenham are coming up next year, so there's going to be a North London derby. Man United are coming up. There's a lot of potential for big games there. But of course, we're talking about players signed from German clubs. One of the players we signed last summer from a German club, Tobias Kemmer, we also had the opportunity to speak to at London Colney, and Tobias is an absolutely fascinating character. Unfortunately, been injured a lot this year, but I don't know how... Do you follow her closely on Instagram at all?
Yeah, I do have her on Instagram, and I was just saying that it was an exciting interview because I didn't know that much about her. Tim, you've managed to get another great interview with her. Well, I didn't know what her profession was before she joined Arsenal, so I wonder if the listeners did.
Indeed, and you know, she's a policewoman. She's a real action woman. I think she might be hyperactive, to be honest. but we'll roll that interview now, because Tobias a fascinating character, and hopefully next season we'll see what a great player she is. Let's roll that in now. Now I'm joined by Arsenal midfielder, defender, forward, goalkeeper, maybe sometimes.
Freestyling.
Yeah. Arsenal's German international, Tobias Kemmer. Tobias. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Tobias, a season probably of really, really mixed emotions for you. Your first season in England, I understand you got the injury after you'd agreed the transfer, but before you arrived. And it's been quite an injury-hit season for you. But still, you've had some involvement and Arsenal have won the league. So what's, just from a personal perspective, what's your kind of assessment of the season?
I mean, at first, I didn't expect that year I had. It was not my best literally it was my worst year I've ever had. But I think this is football, so you will have injuries. And now, I mean, I had the worst case, the cartilage injury. But all in all, it was a tough year for me. But with all, because I came in summer after I was 12 years in Potsdam, so it was my highlight. It was good to have something new around me, a new coach, new teammates. So I always was focused on to get into it, and not because I was every single day in the gym try to work hard on my comeback. And unfortunately, it didn't work like I wanted to have it, but I think, how I said, it's football, and in November last year, I already was in training with my teammates, so I had the feeling being part of the team, not even the gym, so especially now in the end of the season, because we won the trophy and we will hold it next Sunday against Man City, hopefully with a good game before. And it's just like, sometimes when you're out for such a long time, you don't feel you're a part of the team, but it's different here because I already had a few game minutes, and I'm every day I'm seeing that my teammates here working hard, and especially in the gym we work together, and so I can say like it feels like I'm a part of it.
Yeah, and I've spoken to Dan Carter a few times this season, for example, and she kind of described you as the rehab crew.
Yeah.
Because there's been quite a few of you this season. And, you know, she spoke a lot about what a great support network you've been for each other. And particularly for you with Vicky Schnaderbeck, who's come in and had pretty much an identical situation in season. So how have, having the likes of Dan and Jordan and Vicky around, how has that kind of helped you in your integration to Arsenal?
So it was literally like a small team in the gym, unfortunately, on one way. But on the other way, it's just good to have these players around you, because you're more motivated when you're seeing other players working as hard as you, and especially when you have the same exercises. So it was a great support of them, and I think, or especially because I remember Jess, she was back on the pitch, how we celebrated it, like you can see, okay, that will be your next step, and you're just looking forward, and you're happy that at least one of your rehab group is on the pitch again. But I think it was, especially for me, it was so important to have these players around me, because when you're in, everybody is outside on the pitch, and you're just in the gym every day. It doesn't matter how the weather it is outside, so you have to stay in. And so it was a great support, a great like atmosphere, just have them around you and work together on your comeback.
And I'm also kind of interested, you've got quite an interesting backstory in that you're a policewoman in Potsdam, and I, my understanding is you'll go back, you're on a leave of absence from the police in Germany at the moment, and you'll go back there and continue. How did that come about?
So when I finished my A-level in Germany, I just decided, or I knew I have to be, or I have to do something around besides football, because when I'm like a type of player, when I'm just, I can be too focused on football, and then it's too much. Then I lost to play football with fun. So it was for me important to try to coordinate my second or my life after my career with football right now. And it was a great opportunity and great support, because the police in Potsdam, where I lived, they supported me to do the education and to do all the internships, because it was quite hard. We had training twice a day, and then I had to work on the police station 8 hours. So it was a great communication between the police, and the coach as well. So it was, 5 years, it was quite tough to coordinate it, especially for me as a player, and with the World Cup and with the Olympics, I lost the time where I had to go, or where I had the internship in Germany at the police station. So that's the reason I really appreciate it right now, just be part of my football life, especially when because of my rehab.
And kind of off the pitch as well, following like your Instagram account, for example, it does seem like you have a lot of extracurricular kind of interests. Your camper van, for a start. And you always seem to be building something or planting something. Yeah. And I'm interested in, is that part of, is that like a deliberate kind of effort to keep busy, or are you just one of those people who always has to be doing something?
It's
just,
I grew up on a farm, so I like to see something growing up, and it doesn't matter if these are vegetables or something else I want to build, and I like to do it by my own, just because it's always a learning process. So all the theory for my camper van I had from the YouTube different YouTube tutorials. And it's just quite nice to have something besides football. And this is right now the camper van and the gardening I'm doing. And it's just, especially now in my case, because of my long-term injury, quite important for me. Because you are so So in up to in it, like, you're so focused on your injury because you need to do recovery, everything else, treatment, then a hard session in the gym, and it's good to have something you can forget your injury, especially now in my case, my knee. So I'm lost in the garage where I do my camper van stuff, and this is just good for my mind and mentally as well.
And you came over with Leo Volti, obviously, and you know, long-term teammate of hers in Potsdam as well. Right. Unfortunately, she's caught the injury bug now, but I think up until she was injured, she was one of Arsenal's best performers. I wanted to ask, first of all, how you've seen her adaption on the pitch and how much she's helped you. Is it right that you live together?
Yeah, right, yeah.
And how much you've kind of helped each other with your adaption to Arsenal?
I mean, I already knew how her performance is because I played with her together in Potsdam for a few years. So, and there she was captain and she did a lot for the club, and I already knew when she will have something new around her that she will increase her top level. So it's, yeah, I'm just looking forward to how she played football here, how she increased her level on that football level. And I mean, I'm, in case of her injury right now, I'm, I think, the most experienced person what a knee surgery is about and all the rehab is about, so I can help her a lot. And yeah, unfortunately, so it's her left and my right, so yeah, but this is what I said before, this is football, this is, I mean, not even football, it's sport, all about sports. You will have an injury, it just depends if this is a long term or short term, and it's almost that how you reacted on it. So because you have to work hard on your performance, especially when you work on your comeback, so it's quite tough, but there's like an end of this rehab time, and there you have to fight for.
And my final question, because we've only really seen you in little brief cameos from the bench at the moment, and we know from your career that you can play in pretty much any position. Has Joe spoken to you about where he sees you in this team long term, which position he might have you play?
So before in Potsdam, I played two seasons as a striker. And in the national team as a fullback, and he said he could see me as a fullback or as a winger. But for me, it doesn't matter which position. For me, it's more important what teammates are playing around me and what harmony we have. And it doesn't matter which position is that. Because or in my past, I played a few positions, different positions, and I think it was good for me because on every single position you have a different point of view of the game. And this was a learning process for me as well, because now I know how the teammates around me are moving to the ball or how their runs are, and it's, especially for me, it's quite good to know because I already played that position.
Okay, Svea, thank you very much.
Thanks, Svea.
So that was our interview with Tibia Kemmer, who she's played, I kind of introduced her the way I did because she has literally played in every single outfield position for Germany. So you can tell from that she's a serious player. Pippa, to kind of wrap up, obviously we've got the World Cup starting in a couple of weeks. And you're going to be out in France, is that right? What are you going to be doing and who for?
So I'll be out there for most of the World Cup, and I'll be out there presenting for Give Me Sport Women's social media channels, and I'll be mainly covering the England games, but of course be getting in on all the action. Hopefully get some great player interviews, and we'll still be doing a lot of fan interaction before and after games also.
Awesome. And you know, hopefully maybe nab an Arsenal player or two for the hashtag content here. Albeit, like we say, we were given six players a couple of weeks ago, so we've got quite a bit coming up over the summer. But Pippa, just to wrap up, where can people find you on social media?
So on Twitter and Instagram, my handle is @Pippa_Monique. and on YouTube it's PippaTube. I think that's the only places you can find me for now.
Awesome. And Pippa, basically from the next episode onwards, you know, you'll be more of a host than a guest.
Yeah.
And we're absolutely delighted to have you. Huge asset, I think, to this podcast going forward, and really, really exciting. So thanks for joining us, not only today, but kind of going forward. And yeah, look forward to making a lot more of these in the kind of months to come.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an amazing summer, and looking forward to the next season even more now. So yeah,
cool. Okay, thank you very much for joining us on the May edition of the Arsenal Women Askcast. We will have we'll have a couple more episodes for you during the summer. We had interviews with Lisa Evans, Emma Mitchell, Yanni Arndt, Katrina Veya, Louise Quinn, Katie McCabe as well. So we'll kind of drop those over the summer. For the World Cup, personally, I will be doing some writing for Betfair, and you'll also find me on the Offside Rule podcast. With the presenters there. It's a fantastic podcast anyway, but they'll be doing a daily podcast over the Women's World Cup, and I will pop up a few times. Jilly Flaherty will also be on that, I believe. So, you know, two South East Londoners for your ears there. And yeah, so if you're interested in following either myself or Pippa during the Women's World Cup, we'll be doing a lot of content. But we will speak to you on this podcast again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.